The announcement is, with Discovering Buddhism starting in March. Oh, and now I need to, wow. Just when we thought we know how to do everything, I forgot to mute my YouTube. Okay, so for the third time is a charm, right? We will begin offering Discovering Buddhism in person at the Kadampa Center. Woo! But in addition to in-person options, there will still be the Zoom option as well as streaming live on YouTube. And of course, all of our Discovering Buddhism classes are recorded, which I just started the recording, as you know. And so if you miss a class or you want to go back and revisit a class, you can find those recordings on the Kadampa Center's YouTube page. And so what that will look like is some folks, if you choose to do so, can come to the Gampa. Our Discovering Buddhism instructors or teachers will be there as well. And we will have some COVID precautions put in place. We'll have a limited number of seating. We will have socially distanced seating. Mask will be required. And the big one is that COVID vaccine status will be required as well. So once I get the registration form uploaded to the website, hopefully there will be a place where you can upload your vaccine card. And we're doing that really just because we want everyone protected, and all of our precious students and teachers, the volunteers who may be there helping with class and everything. So if you have any questions about that, please just email me. I'm happy to answer any questions or address any concerns you may have. Again, this option would be available to come on site, or you can continue to join class on Zoom or live stream via YouTube as well. So look for more information about that soon. This is class 5 of 6 for establishing a daily practice, and Hemant and I did decide to go ahead and have our 6th class next week. So we will have class on Valentine's Day. So next Monday, the 14th, please join us. And then we will have a 2-week break, and we will start Samsara and Nirvana on March 7th. And that's going to run only for four Mondays in March. And of course, we will monitor the COVID situation should it look like it's not safe for us to be back in the building, we will reassess that plan. But right now, as it stands, we're going to try out Discovering Buddhism in kind of this hybrid where we can have folks on site as well as online. And I think that's all the announcements I have, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Hemant unless anyone has any questions about anything. Any questions? I'm not seeing any. Okay. Let's see here. Hemant, feel free to take it away.
All right. So anyways, before we start, let's do our calm abiding, Shine. This is to bring yourself to the presence with a busy day and so much activity in our minds. This is a great way to start a class and go set our motivation. So you already should know now and familiar with it. But before we do it, let's do the 3 prostrations, at least mentally, if you're not able to do it physically right now. So let's do 3 prostrations. And what we are doing is we're asking for those qualities to come to us. Okay? Thank you. And I'm going to go to the meditation now. So we've done the 3 prostrations, just in case you wanted to take a look at a visual, the location, the way to fold the hands, and how to do it. Okay? Full prostrations or half prostrations. You can top of your head, the third eye, throat, and your heart, and then come back up again and do it again. Okay, here's the plan for the day. Well, I'll give you a little more, preface to this. But before we start, let's just do our calm abiding meditation just to bring ourselves to the present moment. And if you're seated in a chair, fine, just be very comfortable. And you should all know about the back being straight, head slightly tilted, hands are folded, you're round, your right hand is on top of your left hand, your thumbs are touching each other. And then, of course, your jaw, lips, tongue, all relaxed. Tongue is behind the top part of your teeth in the palate, lips slightly touching each other, lightly. And your eyes are slightly open, or if that's difficult, you may close your eyes. Again, this is done so the person is comfortable and can do a good meditation, and there's a good flow of air, and you don't get constrained. Okay? And then what you want to do is just kind of bring your mind to your breath. Again, it's a great way to develop concentration. You have an object, breath, which is neutral. And you're just trying to bring your mind right on your breath. And you find sometimes with a busy mind all day long, all of a sudden, you start to dream or your mind goes somewhere else. It's okay. Don't pressure it. Just take a look at it and tell your mind to come back to the breath. And then focus on your breath going in and going out. Again, don't get into any stories in your mind. As soon as your mind starts to leave the concentration, slowly and gently bring it back to your breath. And let's set the motivation. Always, whenever we start our practice of any kind, always good to have motivation, direction. You can't even open the door or go anywhere until you are motivated to do so. So in the same way, allow yourself to be completely present for this time, this teaching session, and recognizing that usually our lives are filled with busy activities, simply concerned with survival, or the short-term comfort and happiness of this life. If you think about it, of the 24 hours, usually a third of that time is spent working. A third of that time is spent sleeping. And the remaining time is usually spent doing things like shopping for supplies, food, clothing, preparing and eating or cleaning after food, washing, or various other busy activities. Even social engagement, movies, magazines. The percent of our life that we actually spend in spiritual practice, making concerted effort, is very, very small. Yet, we have great wishes for what we'd like to accomplish in that arena. So making the determination that since the time that I spend in my spiritual life is very small, and usually somewhat distracted, I'll make the best effort I can to listen to these teachings carefully and to try and put them into practice to to the best of my ability. Why? Because I don't want to suffer. I want to experience happiness. I have suspicion that there is a greater happiness available, a longer lasting happiness that I could attain. And I have some suspicion that I could develop greater wisdom, greater compassion, greater ability to help others. And if I check up in my heart, that's what I wish to do. And I'm tired of seeing suffering in the world. I'm tired of seeing war. I'm tired of seeing environment degrade year after year. And I'm tired of seeing people fighting, worn out, aging and sick. I want to do something to stop all of this. There must be another way. The Buddha's claim is that he found another way. He identified suffering. He identified the causes. He achieved the end of suffering. And then he revealed the path. I wish to follow that same path, attain that same state, and then reveal that method to others. So invite to this place our teachers and guides of this life, those who are carrying the lineage of these precious teachings to this present day. Ask them to abide with us and bless our minds for this time as we listen to these teachings on behalf of all living beings. You can bring your mind back to the session now. Okay. So this is the beginning of fifth session, which is how to deal with obstacles to the practice and what to do when our practice does not seem to be producing the desired results. Okay. First, we will again review how we got here in the first place. And again, when I'm saying these words, you should contemplate on some of the things we've repeated in the class. I go through previous sessions. We go through the slides, which I will again do some of it today. But again, I want you to start linking some of those things where we began. What is it that I'm supposed to do, right? In this module in establishing daily practice, and all the modules in Discovering Buddhism, if you think about it, this one is how to actually change our minds and change our lives through these teachings. That's the main piece of this whole module. The program was not designed like an academic program to get nitty-gritty about what does that mean and what does this mean and all that. Rather, an experience that you can gain. You get the teachings or the sessions that you learned, and then you can apply a little bit in your life. So there's in every module, there's a practice component. And when the council and the FBMT got together, that's what they intended to do, is to give you a little taste of what it is like to practice and to learn each and every module and how it is all put together. Okay? So there's a practice side to each and every component here. And in this particular module, establishing the daily practice, it assumes that at some point in our Buddhist study, we are going to want to make an integrated, this as an integrated part of our lives in a very, very deep way. Right? One thing to just listen and just words and me speaking or teacher speaking or whatever it is. But the real root of this is how do you integrate that into your life? And then what happens is as you go into the advanced level classes like learning emptiness and learning bodhicitta and how you would like to really integrate those things into your life, well, you already have a structure in place. You have a daily established daily practice. And then you can incorporate those teachings into and integrate them into your life. Not only that, if you are attending Geshe-la's class or any teacher's class in a tradition, you can then augment some of your training. And I've over time, I used to do a few things very quickly. And as I learned more, little more, little more, right? And it becomes part of your life. It makes you think that way. And, you know, so it's very important. Also, I wanted to bring up the word Kadampa. This is the lineage of Gelug tradition. There are four traditions in Tibetan schools. You might have heard of Sakya and Kagyu and all that, right? This is Gelug tradition, and the teachings are called Kadampa teachings. Similar to the name of our center, Kadampa. The word Ka means the word, and Dham means holy. And if you were to put it in the sentence, it is the teachings of the Buddha, the holy words, and then personalizing instructions. Okay? So it's very important to understand how and why we are learning this Kadampa tradition. Okay? So those who teach Buddha's teachings through personal instructions would be called Kadams. Okay? So with that, in a little background, I just wanted to take a pause and take a pulse. Is everybody beginning to see a little bit of flow? Little bit of, there's a lot of content and sidetracking and coming back and learning, but are you at least beginning to see some flow in what you're supposed to do? And I would at least suggest to you, if you have any questions, certainly we can discuss that. Even the last module, I want to try and keep it short so we have a little more time to talk about how's everything going and some questions I have. So just to gauge if people are beginning to understand few things. Okay. So I put this definition together because I may mention this again. We are riddled with the thought everything is suffering, it's gloomy, I've done so many things wrong, but we tend to forget sometimes that the goal is very, very happy, right? The idea is to recognize what's coming in our way. So if you think about, if your goal is to become Buddha, I borrowed this from my other class, what is that, the path, right? It's presenting the path. When we talk about Lamrim. I took this from that slide thinking, you know, this would be an appropriate place to put it before we get into today's summary of what we've covered and so forth. So what is a Buddha? If you say, I want to become enlightened, I want to become Buddha. First of all, the word Buddha, if you go to Asia, they don't say Buddha. They'll say Buddha. A is silent sometimes. And all that means is awakened one. His name was Gautama Siddhartha, right? Or Shakyamuni, we call him because he came from a Shakya clan. However, we also very normally call him as a Buddha. And what is it to be like a Buddha? When you are, your goal is to become Buddha, what is it? So let's talk about it. It's a fully developed person in a wisdom wing. You remember last class I talked about, in Buddhism, we always talk about two wings. One side talks about the emptiness and the reality and how things exist. And the other side, that while we have this body and this nominal ourselves, that we practice the generosity and morality and patience and so forth. That is the compassionate, where you learn bodhicitta and equanimity and how you actually maintain yourself and develop virtuous mind. That's called the method or the compassion wing. So those are the two wings for the bird to fly. So think about it. Wisdom wing, it literally means when you say the word, he is omniscient. It means literally knowing everything. And if you've taken mind and its potential and you know mind is clear, and the reason we have a lot of obscuration is because our mind is muddy. So when you actually remove some of that dirt, you do have a clear mind that knows it all. To see perfectly the minds of others and seeing things as they are. And on the compassionate wing side, the omnipotence, infinite power, the effortless ability to do whatever needs to be done and has infinite compassion. So when we say the teachers are manifestations of our gurus, of our lamas, of Buddha, or see your teacher as a Buddha, right? Why do we say that? You can see that here, that that mind that is omnipotent can manifest in many, many ways to teach. So now if you put it together, it's the wisdom that knows exactly what and how, where and when, and who is the capacity to do what needs to be done to perfectly benefit all knowing, all compassionate, all wise, all pervading. That's what your goal is. So I want you to have that sink into your mind deeply. That's what you're learning this for. This is why we want to integrate this to change our mind, okay? So establishing daily practice is very important, Majid. Just to very quickly cover, just a couple of pieces, I'm going to go through this very quickly. I think I've repeated that this several times. Just so you know, class one was just a prep work to inform you what this Majid is all about. You know, we did the leather and butter analogies just to make sure that your Dharma practice and your mind, the gap is close, that you're beginning to gel a little bit. It's not something that is part-time. You are truly trying to change your mind. It's, I tell people, if you want to go on a diet or learn to drive a car or play a sport, we have to take classes and we have to practice and we have to stretch and we have to do some, make our mind malleable enough to be able to learn those things and then practice it. It doesn't happen the first day you take a class, right? So that's why we talked about that analogy. And this is where it really, the rubber meets the road, right? Because you want to do something about it. And then we talked about Lama Zopa Rinpoche talking about the morning practices, the mantras to recite, and evening practices in very generic terms. You know, we'll talk about the sleeping yoga. You actually go to sleep in the lap of a Buddha, which we'll cover a little bit today. And when you wake up, he just goes and just melts away in your system. You wake up, you set your bodhicitta, your motivation for the day. You can do your prostrations, and then you go about, you go do a little food yoga if you wanted to do, come back, and then you get to your daily practice, and you're preparing yourself for your meditation session. So let me make sure I'm following it so I don't miss something. I have some notes. I have a tendency to speak myself here. Any questions on morning practices, you know, you when you go to your meditation session, first of all, you have to make sure that you have an altar in place, some sort of an altar, right? Basic altar at least. You want to have some image of a deity and your holy books and your statue, a little stupa on the right hand side minimum, and maybe your teachers. And if you don't have it, just the deity that you're practicing is fine. And, you know, at least a place where you can go and do that. And then you want to at least do three prostrations. Again, you're wanting that quality to come to you. You're again making your softening, you're preparing your mind. So you have an altar, you do your little bow down. And then you want to make sure, before you even sit down, you want to do a couple of things. You're again, this are called preparatory practices, again, preparing your mind for meditation. So you clean the place, right? You do a little cleaning, make sure the dust is gone, cleaning. And remember that example, you're really cleansing your dirt. Remember, you're cleaning your mind, right? So make that connection in your mind. Number two, you make some offerings. So nobody's telling you to run out and buy all of these things, right? Even if it is small flower, if it is just a bowl, water bowls, whatever you do, multiply it, offer it as big as you can in your mind. It can be very simple, small things, but do it and make sure you have honestly earned those things that you're offering. You're not stealing them, they're offering them. Remember, the idea is to change our mind. Positive mind. So you want to do positive activities, virtuous things, right? And then obviously at that point, you can, once you've done your six preparatory practices, you know, and can somebody tell me what they are? Anybody wants to take a stab at the six preparatory practices? I already mentioned two. Anybody want to take just a wild guess? We've been talking about it for a while now, but see if your mind gets there somewhere. Doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, just to say, anybody wants to take a risk? No volunteers? Joanna, Bob, Dinesh, Sue, anybody?
Is the seven-limb prayer one of those expiratory practices?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Very good. Mm-hmm. So let me go through them, and I want you to have this in your mind, okay? Cleaning the room and arranging the altar, right? We got that, right? Making offerings obtained in a manner free from wrong livelihoods. You got number two. Then you sit in a seven posture meditation position and generate the mind of refuge and bodhicitta. Three. Then you invoke the merit field, your teachers, your deity. Okay. Then you offer the seven limb prayer and mandala offering. And last, you make requests. So if you look on the right-hand side in class two, they're all there. Everybody get that at least? Clean the space, altar, offering something, sitting in a meditation posture, creating the mind of refuge and developing bodhicitta. Again, we talked detailed about that a little bit, talking about refuge, going under protection of your teachers, of Buddha. Right? Bodhicitta is creating that bodhicitta mind to benefit others and start small. Start with yourself, with a loved one, and then enlarge that. Extend that out. Invoking the merit field, your teachers are sitting there, so you bow to them and you respect them and you call. Of course, Pabonga Rinpoche goes into heck of a detail of what that merit field looks like. But at least to start with, that's a merit field you can do. Or just the image of Shakyamuni Buddha. Then you're sitting down, you're already sitting down in number three, sitting in meditation posture, so you're in, and then invoking a merit field, you can mentally now offer the seven limb prayer. Does anybody know the seven limb prayer? So we say things like, it's in your prayer books, if you go to the Golden Prayer Book and in many, many practices in Shakyamuni Buddha, the meditation manuals and all that, they're all there. Very short ones, there are some extensive stanzas and very long ones. Depending on the scope of people and the practice, you can do the short one. And then I do the short one on a regular basis. I reverently posture with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of all things actual and imagined. This is all mental prayer. Right? I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginning of time. Confession. You're letting it out there. And focus on some particular things that may have gone wrong when you're saying, I don't want to do them again, I confess. Think about what you're doing to your mind here, okay? And then I rejoice in the merits of all holy and ordinary beings. So make sure rejoicing is part of that. You should rejoice your own life. Rejoice the positive things you've done, others have done, teachers have done. All of these things you can rejoice. The teachings, I mean. Right? And then you ask the teachers to remain and teach, turn the wheel of dharma for all living beings, right? And then you are making requests them to stay, and then you are dedicating all of those positive qualities as a dedication and direction that you're harnessing your own growth. You just direct it over there and say, I offer this. So your mind is now very, very ripe. What a beautiful, you're sitting down and your mind is quiet and now you can go to your meditation session, right? And then, do we remember, there are four basic parts of your meditation session. In very general, of course you can make it as complex as you want, but in general you're preparing, which we just talked about, preparatory practices. You're shifting your mind, isn't it? You're shifting your mind from coffee and breakfast and what I'm going to do and get somebody ready and I gotta get ready and all those things for a while, for a moment that goes, sits down and you get in a comfortable position. Then you set your motivation. Okay, positive motivation, obviously, for positive actions. And then you do your actual meditation. You can start with a calm abiding meditation, just to calm yourself, just like we do before the class. Take that as an example, breath meditation, something very easy, calm yourself down, and then pick up a topic of the lamrim. Right? And then, as we mentioned yesterday, you can do a glance meditation. In the beginning, for a week or so, look it up. Just look at the contents, look at the meditation manuals, look at the topics, how the Lamrim is organized, and then pick up your first one or second one, death and impermanence, maybe precious human rebirth. And even within that, you don't have to know everything. Just pick up a topic. I'm so happy to be alive and I have all the freedoms to be able to practice Dharma. You can think of people who don't have that opportunity. Okay, I have Dharma friends that I can relate to and talk about it. How many places you can't do that? So just pick a topic. If I look at death and impermanence, you see a roadkill and think, oh, I'm so happy. I know that death can come anytime. I'm glad to be alive that I can practice. Things allow some of your mind to look at it from different angles. What will happen to you? These are fears we have. Why? Because we are very attached to the self without knowing how the Dharma is laid out, actually. And once you know the Lamrim and you understand emptiness and bodhicitta and why we are in samsara, it will start to release you a little bit of those fears. And you will have an urgency to then practice even more. Okay? So at least understand those things. And the last thing we have is actual meditation, and then you dedicate everything. You want to harness and direct your positive energy you've created. So that summarizes the first two classes, basically. And then we went to class three. Okay? I don't want you to lose your link. Getting up in the morning, motivation, bodhicitta, prostrations, whatever you want to do, come back, do your preparatory practices, include the meditation and also your seven-minute prayer offering, the mandala offering, taking the refuge and so forth, right? All the way down to making the quest. And then you can pick a topic of a Lamrim and do meditation. So at least you can have those things very easily done. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be this, you know, in your back of your mind, I gotta go. No, do what you can do very nicely, even if it's few minutes. Sometimes Keshav, I even say, even if you do meditation for 5 minutes when you are feeling good, it's time to stop. Okay, so nobody's saying that you gotta know everything, you gotta memorize everything. Yeah, there are some prayers, it will be very helpful once you know it. It becomes a second nature, but while you're saying it, your mind is focused. It's very important in that way that you learn a few things. Okay? And then, of course, we talked about the graduated path to enlightenment. And we talked about how to look at those things. And we looked at the 8 freedoms and the 10 richnesses. We talked a little bit about 9-point death meditation. Okay? And the goal of Buddha Dharma in the class three. Remember, we even did this in the motivation. It is not to calm down and relax. It's not the only goal of Buddha Dharma. Oh, you're a Buddhist, you must be very calm and collected and relaxed. That's fine. It's a precursor. The fact is, Buddha says, you don't have to age, get sick and die. Think about that for a second. That should prompt some questions in the back of your how he found the way. And once you understand the Lamrim, you will understand that way. Okay? And a multi-pronged approach was nothing more than you don't have to sit for 2 hours and do all of those things. You can take a break, come back, do a little bit of here, do a little bit of there. Have some sort of a cadence and practice and advance yourself slowly and steadily where you can get some deep experiences. That was the idea behind that. Any questions so far? And then we talked about protecting our minds. So now, Dharma is not, like I said, the hour or half an hour that you sit on the cushion. If you're trying to change your mind, if you think about the activities in your mind every single day, I like this, I don't like this, oh, I hate that, oh, I don't know why I'm watching this. Think about all the things that go in your head. How do you change that? We've been practicing it since many, many lifetimes. And what you're trying to do now is taking the opportunity to change those negative behaviors or mindsets, I should say, or mind thoughts. So we give you an example of the training in the 8 verses is from page 161 of the Golden Prayer Book. And I gave you an example of that, you know, last class. I'll repeat that. Matter of fact, I'll give you one of the things. You don't have to go through everyone. And I would even suggest, if you are sometimes, if you want to really learn this, ask Geshe-la. But here's a good one. I typically like the third one very much. Vigilant. Be vigilant. The moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. So think about your mind. When something negative comes in your head, a wrong thought comes in your mind, slow down. Avert it. Move it out. That's the mind training also. Right? So think about those things. We have these tools. And, you know, as you're practicing, learning, advancing, pick up the book and look it up sometimes. You know? Then we talked about lambrim colored glasses. If you remember that, so now you're practicing death and impermanence. And I'll repeat this part again for the later part of the class. But think about it. If you're thinking about impermanence, death and impermanence, you have your lambrim glasses on, you finish your session, you've taken your breakfast, shower, ready to go. Now look around when you go to grocery store, to work, go for a walk, or you go to a park, whatever you do, look at the trees. Look at the branches, the leaves have fallen, new ones will come. Trees change. Leaves change. Look at the floor you're walking on. It was new. The carpet you have, at one point it smelled different when it was new. Maybe it's not so pretty anymore. Okay. Look at anything you have and see the impermanence in it. At some point, look at yourself. Are you the same person that you were 10 years old, when you were 10 years old? When you were 15 years old, when you were 25 years old, and for some of us, past 60, a lot of experiences. And you can see we change. Our mind changes. The good news is we know it changes and we can change it to positive and know things are impermanent. Is there anything that's permanent, like that you can see when you're walking around? Cars, buses, buildings, castles, things change. So great meditation, and that goes into your walking meditation. And I was going to say, take time for practice purposes. There are other meditations like Vipassana, insight, where they deliberately walk very, very slow. Each step in your confronting your mind and your thought of every step you take. But for purposes of our practice, you can find a location that you like to go, create a path, and then walk and just look around. The soil, the trees, the plants, the birds, the animals, yourself, and just see how things change. The sun, the moon, the light, the day, you can see things moving around. Everything is in move, changing. So good practice will remind you very quickly that we are impermanent, death is certain, death is indefinite, and the practice and the opportunity in this precious human life is to be able to do something about it and get out of this mundane birth, death, sickness, old age, and death, and be liberated and be enlightened. Okay, that's the point of establishing daily practice. You know, other helpful activities, we talked about creating posters, some people have tattoos, putting them, so you are reminded, never give up. You know, things like that, right? Never give up. You know, there will be days you just can't focus. And, you know, and you need a little bit of juice, you know, like, my goodness, why, you know, something is not working, but a little reminder here and there are very helpful, right? And then you can also do a self-evaluation practice, like creating a journal, to write down some positive things you want to accomplish today, or if you are a person that does small white lies and say, for next hour, I'm not going to do that. For today, I won't do it. It's just practice. These are all practices. And why? Because you want to change your mind and actually evaluate it. You think, wow, this is amazing how many times I do this. Also the positive side, right? If you do something positive, note that. Put a check mark. Put a cross. And see how it's helping you. Okay? And remember, the Dharma is everyday Dharma. It's what you think, what you do, in between session, in session, when you talk, when you go to work, when you go to sleep, when you eat. This is not a burden. This is something that should completely liberate you. So don't do it with a constraint like a part-time job that I got to do. Make it part of your rejoicing. Do it with fun a little bit. Keep happiness in it. But just think how you're slowly allowing your mind to see things in a good way. Okay, and don't give up. And then we talked a little bit about vow, so let me see if we're on the money here. And you know, when you take refuge, if you've not taken a refuge, fine. But if you take refuge with a qualified teacher, typically you don't have to take all five of them. You can take one, two, three, or five of them. But typically, no killing, no lying, no sexual misconduct, no stealing, no intoxicants. And you can read more details. There's lots of books and booklets available that tells you more about refuge. And it's very powerful. And remember something. You cannot kill. But if you make a vow and a commitment and not kill, much more powerful than simply not killing. Why? Because it's in your mind stream. There's an aura. Look at the ordained people. You see a little bit of energy around their, positive energy around their body, because they live in vows. It's the quality and the commitment that you make in your heart, in your mind, I should say. Right? That's what drives this. Is it possible you're going to break it? Yes, we all do. But then you go back and you purify yourself and try to live it as much as possible. So you go back to it. And then there are other things you can do. There are bodhisattva vows, there are eight Mahayana precepts, all different levels of practice. But I wanted to mention this specifically because you live in a day like a monk. So when you go to retreat, they will usually say, precept is usually done in the dawn before sunrise. And the first one is usually given by a qualified teacher or a lama. However, for practice purposes, you can practice on your own. And then you can take sometimes a real precept. Okay? That's because they give you transmission. The teachers will give you transmission much more powerful. Our mind is not sometimes ripe for that. So, but anyways, you take those four basic vows of not killing, not stealing, not lying, and not intoxicants. But then you allow yourself to be disciplined by saying, I'm not going to go and feed that eye with sitting on high seats and eating at wrong times and singing and dancing, the pleasure part of it, and wearing perfumes and jewelry and, you know, things like that. You're basically living like a day in a monk's shoe. Okay? So that's another practice you can do. It was developed, if I've read it correctly, for the kings who wanted to practice, but they were always sitting on big thrones and they had to run the daily things and their life and all that. So this was one day to bring them down to earth a little bit. But we can see the value of this, that you simplify for a day. You eat once before the noon, then you fast till the next morning. And it's amazing what that does to your mind when you're in the vow. And you're practicing and reading the teachings and Lamrim and so forth, or attending a retreat session. So that's that for that, okay?
Hemant, do you have a moment for a question? Carmen has her hand raised.
Sure.
Go ahead, Carmen. Don't forget to unmute.
Yeah, I come from Peru, right? And I'm from a different culture, and I was raised as a Catholic, and so I had a lot of guilt, which I'm actually reliving now that I'm in Buddhism. But I also a very happy person, or I used to be, so I love singing. I like dancing, especially dancing, and I don't see it as a bad thing to dance, because it depends on how you dance, I guess.
I was going to say you define what we are saying here for 124 hours.
Only 24 hours.
You're just controlling your mind to say, I am going to just read Lamrim today and practice Dharma. So you're giving up something that is you're attached to.
Okay.
It's
okay,
not
I can do
that. The music is bad or dancing is bad. It is not in that. Or sitting in a high chair. Well, my bed is pretty high, I would say, depending on what you say, floor versus high. How high? Okay. The point is not that. The point is about disciplining for 24 hours to get your mind simplified so it doesn't go all these places.
Okay, good, good. But other thing that bothers me too is the killing thing. Well, I'm from a different culture and I've, you know, eat meat in the past and I still do sometimes. I try to be as vegetarian as I can, you know, try not to eat meat. And so I don't kill the animals, but I also, again, have guilt because I say to myself, okay, I'm not the one killing, but others are doing it. So I have all this, really, it's bothering me.
So you need to read up more in Lamrim. And also, as far as you are not directly killing yourself, you know, and you are doing certain blessings and prayers, I am told that in some cases that is okay. You want to minimize any kind of suffering for anything. That is the main idea. So I know a lot of people eat meat. And so this is, of course, not the topic. You can go deep dive into it. I personally don't eat. I have eaten it before. And, you know, over time, I have just told myself that, you know, I can live without it. And the good thing is, my wife can make such good Indian meals, I don't have to think about it. So let me put it in a good way too. It is not about that. It's about your discipline. You are not killing and not making something suffer. And so that's your own conviction. And you do the best you can and you work with that. And certainly you can speak with Geshe-la. There are a lot of, if you look at Lama Sopa Rinpoche, what he says about eating meat, read up. And then you do what is good, right for you.
Because I also worry about all the people who are farmers or who work in farms and they kill animals and, you know, it's like, yeah, it's complicated.
Well, you got to think about that. And you got to think about karma. You got to think about how you do it. There is a couple of ways karma ripens. Of course, this is not a class of karma, but you have to have an object. You have an intention to kill. You have to do the action. And then know that it is you've done it. Just like four things for karma to ripen. Unintentional killing. We walk every day that we breathe bacteria all day long.
He
can step on an ant by
his hand. Yes. But how about when my father went fishing in the ocean and he caught a halibut, you know, to feed us?
So
it's complicated.
I will leave that up to your thinking. But there is definitely karma of creating a karma with those four points in mind, okay? But don't take, there is no guilt in Buddhism. You regret if you've done something wrong. Guilt is associated with, oh, look at me, poor me, I. Please give me some attention. That's how guilt ripens and it gets you sad and depressed. Regret is, I recognize a mistake. Maybe I will not do it again. You know, move on. And that's how you cleanse yourself and you immediately move on. It's a very beautiful way. We'll do something that today with the meditation on how to deal with the gifts. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I know Michael had a hand up. I'm sorry, Michael. I didn't allow you to speak.
I was going to say exactly what you said about karma, the involvement. Karma's involved in this very intricate ways, indeed in profound ways we can't grasp completely. And it just requires a lot of compassion and a quest for wisdom. But on the other hand, the idea of singing and dancing and that the like, and as a musician, I mean, it's about our motivations, it's about our intentions. And I've talked to Geshe-la about this, and no, you don't have to stop that. It's like, if you made me quit music and playing, I'd probably go back to being a Catholic. I'd eat meat again. And it's the same thing you said about the eating meat or becoming a vegetarian. Sure, that's nice. That's one extra step you can take. But and killing the animal itself is another thing. I mean, for people who eat meat, and most of my Kadampa friends probably eat meat, I believe. Half of us don't. It's probably 50-50. But it's no big deal. I mean, our Geshe's do, and they grew up in a place where you ate yak meat out of necessity.
Yeah, so, and that's why, Michael, I said, it really is your own practice.
Sure.
And when you take these vows, you need to think in those terms for yourself.
And the attitude has to correspond a lot with, like, the way Native Americans and the view of the Great Spirit, that you take the fish. Yeah, you kill the deer. But you know what you're doing. You're conscious of it. You apologize. You make sure your mind is clear about what you did to the benefit of your family.
Correct.
And at the cost of a life of an animal.
Yeah, I would suggest that you guys really look up karma, do some other action items, look at different angles of what Lama Zopa Rinpoche says or what other teachers have said about that. And again, we were talking about 8 Mahayana precepts for 24 hours. It is just a discipline to control where our mind easily wants to go to enjoy or wants to have a little fun. I'm not saying not to like music or not to dance or not to sleep in a bed, nothing like that. For when you are in a retreat type situation or when you are practicing something for 24 hours, your mind is more focused on your meditation or your topic of learning, and you discipline, you kind of control your mind from going various places. And so they just set up a precept to say, for 24 hours, I'm going to take this and see if I can manage my mind a little bit and focus on what I'm working on. That's all this is all about, right? And nobody is saying that we have instruments being played in the kampa, that's music. Matter of fact, when we offer the 7 the bowls, the last one is sapte, which is music. So nobody is denying, saying don't enjoy music or dancing. Nobody's saying that. This is simply practicing for 24 hours a discipline to say, I am attracted to these things for 24 hours. I'm going to only focus on this topic for the retreat, or I will meditate on my lamrim. So it's just a way to practice to not have other attractive things to take you away. That's all this is, right? All right. So thank you, Michael, and thank you, Carmen, for those good questions. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, so yoga of eating. We're talking about food here. Let's talk about this. So when you go for offering, this is suggested way of doing it. You bless the food by visualizing the syllables Om, Ah, Hum, body, speech, and mind, right? This beautiful energy of the body, speech, and mind. In the space, you bless the food, first the Om, Ah, Hum. As you recite those Om, Ah, Hum 3 times, visualize that the light rays to all the holy beings, that they go, and that the light rays that go to holy beings, and they take the qualities of the all of these, the body, speech, and mind, the qualities of this holy being, and it gets absorbed into Om, Ah, Hum. It comes in front of your food, and then you absorb that, and then the syllables melt into a light, and they get absorbed into the food, right? And the food transforms and becomes incredible nectar, okay? And then I would say, before you partake it, so go to the last bullet point, think about your teachers having this beautiful nectar in the teachings that they give you, okay? And then when you partake it, you are then visualizing taking this nectar and purifying yourself. It's a very quick thing, actually. It's not a too long of a thought, but you can practice first, and you can see Om, Ah, Hum, Om, Ah, Hum, Om, Ah, Hum. Quick visualization, all the good qualities, beautiful energy in there. You can also have a little Buddha in your heart, and it goes right into that, and it nourishes you, but you also visualize your teachers partaking it, and that all that good energy goes into your system, and it blends with you, these good qualities. That's how you want to partake your food, right? Just something to think about. There's a really nice booklet on food yoga, okay? There are different offerings also, various ways to offer it. There's a long cloud mantra. You can also do some offerings. And the way to go to sleep, again, lie down on your right side if you can. At least, have you seen the sleeping Buddha statues? That's how Buddha went to Parinirvana, right side. This is auspicious if you can, but at least start out that way, you know, and then say things like, may I pass away from sorrow, like Buddha himself. Okay? And as you lay on your right side, imagine that you're laying your head on the lap of a Buddha or your teacher, Shakyamuni, Buddha. Okay? And then pass into the sleep with them in your mind. So now remember, when you set up the motivation, when you wake up in the morning, guess what? You're waking up already in the lap of the Buddha. And you're visualizing that you wake up, the Buddha melts into light and enters your crown and descends in your heart. This gets you ready for your yoga that you want to start for the day, developing the bodhicitta mind and your preliminaries. And then maybe you want to take a break and then do your preparatory practices, sit in the meditation, do you offer your Lam Rim, making the requests, reading the Lam Rim book and so forth, right? You see that whole how it flows? Okay, for 15, 20 minutes, I want to go through accumulating merit, purification practice, and heartfelt request. This is what you do when you are facing obstacles in your practice. Okay, so think about accumulating merit. Okay, why are we doing that in the first place? Okay, what's the point of doing this? You got to think about it. You want to bring success to your practice. You're practicing to become enlightened and you're trying to bring your mind, change your mind to a positive state of mind, making it more virtuous, and so that you can, of course, you're preparing for your next life to make it better, right? That is the reason for that. So when have you noticed sometimes things are slow? Your mind starts to argue or it says, I just can't do this, or it is just dull, okay? That's when you know you need some merit making. Okay? And what can a merit making be? Could be very simple, like helping a Sangha member, showing some generosity. It doesn't have to be a lot of dollars if you don't have money, even a dollar to a Sangha member, but wish it could be more. Offering services, helping our spiritual coordinators maybe, or doing meditation classes, right? So many ways you can contribute and create merit. Teaching classes, right? These are all merit making. Being helpful, being compassionate, being kind. So do some activities related to that and being of service to any Dharma events, okay? You can do mandala offerings and helping with making bowls. Now that Kadampa Center is opening up, there are opportunities to offer water bowls. Maybe you can come a few minutes early and say, I'll set it up. That's a service, right? So you can do some merit making. It's a very positive energy. All merit making is a positive energy that you harness. Okay? We are born as a human anyway, so we must have given up. It's like a bank balance. We must have depleted so much merit. Be thankful we are in the human realm, so we now need to bring that bank balance up again with merits, right? So we do positive things. And then sometimes the next thing is you recognize sometimes it's very difficult. Things are just not there. It's blank. You can't visualize. Things are just not going your way. It's really, really like you can't even visualize anything, right? And you really feel like you can't practice. You know, then it's a little indication you may need to purify. There are some obstacles that are coming in your way and you want to do purification practices. And you use the four opponent powers when you do purification practice. We'll talk about Vajrasattva and the prostrations a little bit. But at least the four opponent powers are that you regret, you develop this mindset, regret that you may have done whatever you've done negative for the day, regret that it happened. And then what you do is you do what they call reliance on the Dharma, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. You know, you trust that will help you. And then you find a remedy or antidote to something. If you've taken something wrong or stolen something, you want to give it back, that thing. So you have a remedy for something that you've done wrong. And last but least, you resolve not to do it again for even 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 1 hour, one day, or never. So 4 hours, regret, reliance, remedy, and resolve. And somebody asks the fifth one, rejoice, if you're able to successfully do it. And remember, some of these things are from previous lives. We've been committing some of these non-virtuous actions for many, many lives. It's not easy to get rid of some of these thoughts, but when you know that something is holding you back, and it occurs again and again and again, and it's stopping you. It's like, my gosh, I don't know why this bad thoughts come to my mind all the time. Do some purification and you will see how it helps you. Okay, the last but least in the three things is the definitely heartfelt request. I can start with the top, that there's an amazing amount of literature that tells you you need a teacher. So the question is, if I don't have a teacher, what do I do? You know, it's not like I can meet my teacher like in the old days where students were around the teacher all the time. Sometimes it's on a Zoom call, sometimes also on a CD, sometimes, you know. So how do you develop it? Just know that, believe me, you cannot underestimate the power of your teachers, okay? So you want to make a strong wish. They may be working in the background. If you are taking this class and you are already going and establishing the practice, believe me, there is somebody in the background already working. You just have to recognize it. And so make a heartfelt request, and that day will come too. Okay, sometimes, remember the word, part of the practice in meditation is to do guru yoga. Daily, we talk about that in your meditation, in your lamrim, in your guru yoga. We do Shakyamuni Buddha for those that don't have a teacher. But that doesn't say, you look at a pianist, or driving a car, or going to school, or when you were young, you always had a teacher. Even Mozart had a teacher. Right? Somebody that guides you. Somebody who's your friend. So definitely, and there's enough said about how to choose a good teacher, so we don't want to blindly go. And it doesn't have to always be a Rinpoche, for example. Teachers come in different ways. You just need to recognize it, test them out. They test you out. Takes a little time. Look at their students. Look at who they are. It's like if I look at Venerable George Chernoff or Venerable Amy or Venerable Robin Cortina or somebody like that, Rabina, I mean. Now, so you can look at them, look at their qualities, how they teach, what they do, how they practice, and then find out who's their teacher. Ah, that's the kind of teacher I want. Look at Geshe-la. Look at his teachings. Look at his behavior. Who is his teacher? He himself is a Geshe. Narampa Geshe. So things like that. So test it out. Check it out. And when you're ready, then you commit to it. Okay, but it's good to have a teacher, give you some guidance. So, any questions on making requests? These are the three things that they tell you to do. Accumulating merit, purification practices, we talked about the four opponent powers, we can do Vajrasattva practice, prostrations to 35 confession Buddha, and making heartfelt requests. Okay? You can do generosity, services, offering to Sangha. We talked about that a little bit. Okay? Again, we talked about purification practice. So, there are a couple of books and purification. I don't know if everybody has this. This is basically a freebie, you know, for daily practices, this book. There are other books. If you are really serious about purification practices, I'm just going to show them to you. You can see this, you can buy through FPMT. You know, it's called the Preliminary Practice of Vajrasattva. It gives you the meaning, tells you what to do, how to do when you go to a retreat, a little more extensive on Vajrasattva. And then if you are at a Tantra level and very advanced, there are thick books like that. And it is Lama Yeshe's book, and it talks about becoming Vajrasattva, the Tantric Path to Purification. Just showing it to you for purposes of knowledge. But this daily practice booklet is plenty for daily practice and daily Vajrasattva practice in the evening. You've gone through the day, you may have said something, you may have thought something. In the evening, you can purify it. It's a great practice. You can request a printed copy or download it from a PDF on the FPMT site also. Okay? And we talked about 35 confession Buddhas. Just know that each Buddha has a quality of that mind that you wish you want. And if you don't have time, you can make posters. You can go through the entire prayer first and then bow as many times as you can. You can do 10 or 9 or 10 or 11. You don't have to do all 30 all the time. If you get good at it and you want to do it, that's great. But remember, this is the quality. Each Buddha has a quality that you want, and that's the essence. You are changing your mind. It's a very powerful practice. 35, and there's plenty of it in even the Golden Prayer book. There are even little booklets available. You can read whichever, whatever pleases you. Again, there's books, small booklets, like PMT booklets on that. And so it tells you the power of these two practices. Okay. So I know we have very little time left, and we talked about the heartfelt request. And you can even read emptiness, do mantras. When you do emptiness practice, when you get to advanced level and learn emptiness, even doing mantras in emptiness, just wanted to make one thing. When you do even simple mantras like Tayatha Mune Mune Maha Mune Soha, do you know the entire Lam Rim is there? The first Mune is the lower scope. The second Mune is the middle scope. And Maha Mune is the large scope. Okay, so think about that for a second. And remember, it starts with an Om, right? And I'm going to give you the meaning I have even now. Om. Om is body, speech, and mind, summation of all that energy of body, speech, and mind. And the last word always ends in a swaha. And that what it means is, so may it be with me. And if you look at it, Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha. Starts with the Om Tare Tu Tare Ture. Lower scope, middle scope, large scope. Om Tayatha Bekanze Bekanze Maha Bekanze Soha. Three scopes. So you can see, once you have a glance meditation, in each mantra is the entire Lam Rim. So when you get good at it, you can visualize some of these things. So you can do requests in that way so that it comes to your mind. It helps you. Your teachers can manifest in many forms. So know that when you're meeting a teacher, that they are actually a manifestation of Buddha themselves. Okay? Making this heartfelt request. And those are all good ways to create those requests. Okay. So we will go to now. There's a lot of contents I covered. So ease up on yourself, and sometimes when things don't work, take a break. Okay? Don't cram things in your mind. We give you this information for you to choose and give you some sort of a flow so you can start to develop your own practice. Start small, but at least you know where the tools are, what you can do, when to do it, how to do it. That's the purpose of this, right? And you're going to help yourself. So today we're going to do Vajrasattva meditation. Okay. So before we go, we will mention this mantra when I reach that point, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya and all that. And a lot of times it means nothing to people if you've not practiced it or if you don't know. So what I did was I wrote down the meaning from this preliminary practice book that I showed you. It's in this book. It's also in the prayer book. It's also in the small book. So this is the visualization that if those people who don't know Vajrasattva, you will see what he looks like. He holds this Vajra in right hand. He has the bell in the left hand. The Vajra actually stands for the compassionate side, the method side. The bell stands for the awareness or the emptiness side. And of course, mother and father, bliss and void. Okay. These are all male, female energy. And then the mother has a chopper and a skull cap, and removing, they're both purifying you. So that's the visualization. Just in case you are not familiar with it, at least you have some idea. And before I go, I want to give you the meaning. So read this meaning with me. So when we say this mantra, O great being, whose holy mind is in indestructible nature of Buddha, having destroyed every obscuration, attained all realization and passed beyond of all suffering, you have attained the realization of things just as they. So please do not forsake me. Please bring me closer to your Vajra holy mind. Okay? And grant me the ability. I can't read it, but the ultimate nature of phenomena. Please help me to realize the great bliss. Let me be in your state and grant me all powerful attainments. Please bestow upon me all virtuous actions and glorious quality. Okay? So this is the prayer you're doing. Take a moment to just read it through. So when we come to it and we are saying Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Tenupati Sadido Mebavasato Kayamepa, that's what we are saying. This is English translation. Okay. So let's get into the meditation position. Again, straight, back is straight. Maybe take just a couple of breaths to relax your mind. Two deep breaths. And let's set the motivation for this practice, reflecting on our precious human life and the opportunity that we've found now that we met the teachings, and the wish to take advantage of this chance as much as possible before we die. Thinking of those in our lives that we know directly or indirectly and that we want to help in some way. Acknowledging that place within our hearts that truly wishes to develop and to awaken our qualities of wisdom, compassion, and ability to help others. How wonderful it would be to be free of belief in self-concept, free of the prison of the contracted self, constrained self, and recognizing that even though we might have a great wish to develop realizations in our mind just feels very dull, blocked, unable to see or understand, feeling the great burden of mountains of negativities, misknowing reality, and acting out of ignorance that have been imprinted on our mind stream, cluttering of our wisdom, counteracting our compassion, and blocking our ability. So wanting to be free from all of these blocks, all of these mental veils, all of these negative habits and patterns, and to be free to act in ways beneficial to ourselves and others. So with a wish, we'll do a practice of Vajrasattva. So preliminary visualization. Visualize in the space before us Vajrasattva, father and mother, the union of wisdom and method or compassion, representing the perfect union of our mind with enlightenment, perfect purity, radiating white light. And visualizing ourselves surrounded by all living beings, our father on the right side, our mother on the left, enemies and those beings that agitate us in space before us, and friends just behind us, and with a wish that all of us would quickly find perfect happiness. And then taking responsibility to bring about that. With a deep wish to free our mind of all that which prevents us from actualizing the path quickly, we recite together the verse of taking refuge. And I will just say slowly in your mind, you can either repeat it or if you know the refuge, you may say it at least 3 times in your mind. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create from listening to Dharma, may I become Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. To the Buddha, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by the merits I create from listening to Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. One more time. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by the merits I create from listening to Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Then meditating on the power of regret, especially calling to mind specific actions of body, speech, and mind, which only serve to bring about more suffering for ourselves and others. And realizing that the definition of negative karma is any action which results in suffering, any action involved with ignorance, ignorant liking and disliking of things, and not understanding the real causes of our experiences. Almost many things I do in 24 hours is motivated by worldly concerns, attachments, comforts, and so forth. It is like from birth to death in this life, and it has been like from many, many births, rebirths, from beginningless times. Many of the actions I've created have been non-virtuous, cause of suffering. Not only that, but continuously I also have been breaking the vows. First of all, I've created negative karma in relationship to my virtuous friends, sometimes getting them angry, generating wrong views, harming the holy body, disobeying their advice, and so forth. So having this negative imprints on our mental continuum is unbearable. It is as if I've swallowed a poison and I must practice the antidote right away and purify all this negative karma immediately without a second's delay. In this way, bring to mind specific actions that we may know are not in alignment with our spirit of enlightenment. And generate a great regret and a strong sense of urgency to wash this away from our mind stream. So let's generate bodhicitta. But I'm not practicing this vajrasattva purification for myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all hell beings from the six realms. The gods and the demigods, humans, animals, hungry ghosts, intermediate state beings, and all their sufferings and the causes, and lead them to unsurpassed enlightenment. And in order to do that, I must first get enlightened myself. Therefore, I must purify my negative karma. So we strongly generate in the mindstream this wish to just be free of all negativity and karmic blocks. And now visualize above the crown of your head, seated upon lotus moon seat, the Vajrasattva father and mother. The bodies are white. Each has one face, two arms. He holds the Vajra, or Dorje, and bell. She a curved knife and skullcap. They're embracing each other. He sits in a Vajra posture. She sits in the lotus. Vajrasattva is my root guru, the holy mind of all Buddhas, the absolute, who out of his unbearable compassion, which embraces me and all other sentient beings, appears in this form to purify me and all others. In this way, your mind is transformed into guru devotion. The root of all blessings and realizations of the path to enlightenment. Now on the moon disk, at the Vajrasattva's heart, stands the seed syllable HUM, encircled by a garland of 100-syllable mantra. a powerful stream of white nectar flows from the hum and the mantra garland. And I'm cleansed of all the sicknesses, spirit harm, negative karma, and obscurations. I will say this mantra once. You've already saw the meaning of it. It is also in front of you in case you want to follow along. Again, you already saw the meaning. Om Vajra Sattva Samaya Manupalaya. Vajra Sattva Tenopati Shradido Me Bhava. Sutoshu Me Bhava. Suposhu Me Bhava. Anurakto Me Bhava. Sarva Siddhim Me Prayacha. Sarva Karma Suchame. Chittam Shriyam Kurum Hum. Ha 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 ho. Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata. Vajra Mame Muncha. Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sattva. Ahum Fe. Supposed to do three times, but for, because of the time, at least we did it once. And visualize the final purifying stream of white nectar and light pour from Vajrasattva's holy body and mind. And like a very strong shower, completely cleanses from our body, mind and body every single negativity. Every single mental veil. These wash away completely through the soles of our feet, enter a crack in the earth, and are consumed by the Lord of Death amidst some blazing fire. He becomes completely satiated. His mouth is sealed with double vajra, and he turns and walks away. The crack in the earth is healed. Our body and mind are completely calm and clear, like crystal. And from the crown of my head, Guru Vajrasattva says, child of the race, your negativities, obscurations, and the broken and damaged pledges have been completely purified. At this time, generate a strong faith that all is completely purified, just as Guru Vajrasattva has said. And before Guru Vajrasattva, vow never again to commit those negative actions from which I can easily abstain. Maybe not to commit for a day, an hour, or at least a few seconds. Guru Vajrasattva is extremely pleased with your pledge. The father and mother melt into light and dissolve into you. Your body, speech and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's holy body, speech and mind. And due to all of these merits of the three times collected by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and myself and all the other sentient beings, may I achieve Guru Vajrasattva's enlightenment and lead all sentient beings to that enlightenment by myself alone. May the precious Bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success for myself and all other sentient beings, be generated. And may that which has been generated, not generated, sorry, and may that which has been generated be increased. And may I and all other sentient beings have Lama Tsongkhapa as our direct guru in our future lifetimes and never be separated and actualize the complete path. And now I dedicate all these virtues in the best way so that I may follow after them. Whatever dedication the three times victorious ones gone to bliss have admitted and admired in the, as the best. In the same way, I also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue so that I may perform good works. Thank you, and bring your attention to the class. So that was a little purification practice. You can see, you can even start with refuge, bodhicitta, you know, do your preparatory practices, sit down and even do a nice practice. Or in the evening when you come back from work, it's been a hectic day and mind's going all over the place. Cleanse yourself. Your mind becomes one with Vajrasattva and it purifies you. It's a very powerful practice. You know, there are teachers like Lama Tsongkhapa and the patient, they should carry this, and every time they did something, they would go around a little stupa and do Vajrasattva practice and stuff like that. So very powerful practice of lineage teachers also. Hopefully that made some sense and you understand what a taste of what that practice looks like. In the next session, basically I'm going to keep it short. We're going to do a summation, some question and answers, and make sure we are lined up with what that practice looks like. A couple of comments here and there, and then in the class in a short time. And some advice from Lama Zupa Rinpoche. I know it takes 30, but I'm just want to ask you, if you have any questions, please ask at this time. Or if you have any questions and you have to go someplace, that's fine, just write them down. In next class, we may have a little more time. You may want to ask then, but at least please establish daily routine, daily practice, and remember this is not a part-time job. Do it with fun. Do it with enjoyment. Enjoy the parks, the flowers. Offer them up. Enjoy it that way, okay? And make it happy practice. So, thank you.